This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9. I'm Christine Wong, and in the studio with me is
Frida Liu.
And today we are talking about bridging the financial gap for low-income employees. Now, wanting a salary advance often requires an awkward conversation with the boss, and if that fails, could push cash-strapped workers to take up payday loans or incur overdraft fees. Is there a way to mitigate or avoid this issue? Well, earned wage access companies certainly think so, and we're going to be talking about that. If you want to get in touch with us and be part of the conversation, we are on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and on Twitter at BFM Radio as well. So you may be thinking, how bad is this issue really, right? Sadly, here in Malaysia, it is a massive problem. In fact, in 2021, the police received 683 reports on unlicensed moneylenders and arrested 801 loan sharks between January and August, with the reports involving loans amounting to 2.92 million ringgit. Sadly, the COVID-19 pandemic caused many people to lose their jobs and source of income, forcing some to borrow money from loan sharks for their sustenance, or at the very least, taking out legitimate personal loans that charge predatory interest rates. And this in particular affected the local low-income workforce primarily. So a new crop of Southeast Asian fintechs say that they have an alternative, apps that allow workers to track their earnings on a day-to-day basis and withdraw a portion on demand before payday. And workers pay a fee for this unless their employers absorb it.
This on-demand salary service, also known as Earned Wage Access or EWA, is popular in the US and Europe. But opinion on it is split. Some see EWA as a useful resource without the exploitative interest rates of payday lenders, known as Alongs. But others worry that unscrupulous players could still charge steep fees and spur over-reliance on the apps. This debate is growing as EWA adoption rises globally. The service has been around for a decade, but usage boomed after 2017 when retail giant Walmart partnered fintechs PayActive and even to offer on-demand wages as a perk to 1.4 million workers. EWA business models vary widely, but a common structure in Southeast Asia is for startups to work with employers to offer workers the app as an HR service rather than targeting workers directly.
Mm-hmm. And these startups usually tap financing companies for the upfront capital that funds early withdrawal requests from workers, but in some cases, employers themselves are willing to provide this capital. So exactly how this all works is basically EWA startups at the moment charge fees to either the workers or the employers on a per transaction or membership basis. At the end of the cycle, the employer pays back the withdrawn sums, which is a model that bears some similarities to payroll financing. Mm-hmm. There are probably limits set on how much workers can withdraw in advance that vary from company to company. And, you know, granted, earned wage access is still nascent in Southeast Asia, but investors are showing interest.
All right. So currently, the global payday loan market is projected to reach $46.68 billion US dollars by 2030. And while large enterprises would least likely rely on EWA services, small and medium-sized enterprises will be the ones depending heavily on it. So prior to the pandemic, most SMEs pay their employees, be part-time and full-time monthly based on their work done. Some companies offer payments via bank transfers, while others would pay their staff via cash or checks. But the pandemic soon changed most of these processes in place. So with services becoming more digitized, the use of cash and checks became less significant, and companies soon relied purely on banking services to pay their employees. And while these services were secure and could be automated, there was still the problem with funding for those who required earned wage access.
Mm-hmm. And here in Malaysia, Hari Gaji, co-founder and chief executive Anna Malai Tani, sees demand for earned wage access, particularly as an employee retention tool. So his startup charges either workers or employers a monthly fixed fee. So for instance, paying 10 to 15 ringgit per month provides workers unlimited access to earned wages. The total sum that can be withdrawn is capped at 50% of the salary under Malaysian law. And apparently, as Hari Gaji grew during the pandemic, it was sometimes mistaken as a payroll financing company, which advances employees the full sum of the payroll to ease business cash flow. So they said a lot of companies would come to us and say, you want to pay my salary is no problem, happy to take your money and I'll pay you back next month. But they didn't want to serve them because they're a service for the staff to withdraw the salaries on demand for only a certain portion. function. And alongside that, help companies recruit. Very much HR fintech rather than purely lending to companies. Mm.
So while players are big questions loom on how EWA will be regulated, industry standards will be key to ensure that workers are not charged exorbitant fees or become over-reliant on such apps. Investors are paying attention to the possibilities. Madhu Salini Iyer, a partner at venture firm Rocketship VC, said these products exist because there's a genuine need, but it's a very delicate dance with not overburdening people in the guise of helping. So Iyer is bullish on EWA taking off in Southeast Asia, pointing to a lack of credit access in the region's emerging markets. But she also notes that startups must not begin to look like payday lending. EWA startups also realize that it cannot just be all about on-demand cash. Some are expanding into more value-added services for both workers and employers, such as financial literacy programs, payroll processing, and employee management tools. But in the end, Tani of Harigaji emphasized it's important for governments to have the engagement with EWA players, get an understanding of the cost structure, and set a limit maybe on how much to charge. And do you really want, you know, to be really protecting employees who bear the cost?
Hmm. I found this really interesting just because, honestly, before this, I hadn't actually heard of this particular service. And I don't know, I'm thinking about to what extent does that actually help, right? The whole point of this is essentially you get access to a certain portion of your salary before payday. That's the general gist of it, right? And I think, you know, especially for those who, let's say in the middle of the month, something happens. And as we've seen throughout the pandemic, anything can happen at any time. Your car breaks down, you suddenly have a medical fee to pay, something like that. I think it could be useful, especially if you're living paycheck to paycheck, right?
Yeah.
To be able to withdraw at least a little bit of your salary early. But also, I can see a lot of ways where maybe this could be this could go wrong.
I mean, it's one of those, the buy now, pay later thing, right? Do you get into this, you know, cash advance, you know, and it becomes a habit, right? So I think regulation needs to be in place before, you know, because right now people are coming to the space because there's no regulation yet. And before it becomes a challenge, I think some regulations need to be put up.
100%. Yeah. From what I gather as well, you know, there is talk with the our government about figuring things out. I mean, the mere fact that there is some legal precedent in place where you cannot withdraw more than 50% at a time, I think, you know, already is a step in the right direction. But also, I find it very interesting that this is, again, one of those situations where investors are clearly interested. There's clearly a lot of buzz about this, but it's only slowly now making its way really in Southeast Asia and becoming more well known. So, you know, I think it's very interesting to think about, and I'm curious to know a little bit more about the industry, about how exactly it works, which is precisely why we have after the break, Alex Kim, president and co-founder of Paywatch, which is an earned wage access service provider, will be getting his thoughts, a little bit of a deeper dive on this topic and how exactly it is a solution and hopefully some of the situations put in place so that we can mitigate what might go wrong. So do stay tuned to Enterprise Biz Bytes for now. This is When Did Your Heart Go Missing by Rooney here on BFM 89.9.
Be free, Malaysia. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes with me, Christine Wong, and Frida Liu. And today we're talking about bridging the financial gap for low-income employees here on Enterprise Biz Bytes. If you want to get in touch with us and take part in the conversation, we are, of course, on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899, and on Twitter at BFM Radio. Now, on the line with us to talk about earned wage access and how it could help bridge this financial gap is Alex Kim. He's the president and co-founder of earned wage access service provider Paywatch. Thanks so much for being patient with us, staying on the line with us, Alex. Firstly, tell us a little bit, what are the potential causes of cash flow issues between paychecks in general?
We find that actually, especially our user segment, we find that a lot of employees in each of the markets that we serve are living paycheck to paycheck. So in the case of Malaysia, we're finding that at least 30% of all Malaysian employees are in general living paycheck to paycheck with lingering sort of effects from COVID as well. That's actually affecting their cost of living as well as their personal finances. So, I mean, we're seeing that essentially it only takes one emergency or unexpected expenses, you know, let's say your motorbike breaking down or medical situations for these employees to have their cash flow be disrupted.
And Alex, why do cash flow issues primarily affect the local low-income workforce and how?
So we're actually finding that, I mean, this really does go back to the lifestyle and sort of the financial habits of the employees. So we're finding that employees do live paycheck to paycheck. Minimum wage being capped at $1,500. As I've also mentioned, I mean, it only takes one unexpected expense in order for some sort of financial crisis to be hitting their home, right? So, and I think another aspect to it is that it's not necessarily that the employees have bad credit, it's that they have no credit. And as a result, the lack of credit history allows for the types of access that they have for financial resources to be extremely limited. At least for the M40 or higher income segment, there's the credit cards or other financial kind of bridge financing resources. But this is almost non-existent for some of the segments.
Talk to us about that. What are the, I guess, currently available financial situations for this income segment?
So when we do our surveys in each of the markets, we're actually finding that, generally, I think 90% of the employees in Malaysia have found themselves in situations where they've needed emergency funds but didn't really have access to it. There are other credit products, right? So there are other credit products out there, which I could get into a little bit. However, we're finding that, there are less than ideal solutions, I believe. Like, for instance, like there's the EPF that employees are tapping into, which is something that is not meant to be a bridge financing solution. Of course, I think TNG also introduced recently a loan product that they could also top up onto their e-wallets. And of course, you have your family. Actually, for the vast majority, we're finding that either employees will actually, if they don't provide this sort of, if alternative products do not exist, they will go towards, gravitate towards accessing, predatory lenders, such as payday lenders that are charging anything between 18 and 30% interest per annum, or, going to their family or friends for these sort of to become, basically backstop any sort of these emergency situations that they might be in.
Right. So don't come to me. Now, Alex, why is it the employer's responsibility to safeguard their workforce from predatory financial and opportunists?
So I think, this also kind of hits on the fact that, these other credit providers, for the most part, are essentially borrowing funds at their own, at a high interest themselves, either from another institution or whatever their cost of funds sort of sources might be. And therefore, they actually need to transfer that cost back to the employees. And that's why the interest and fees are so high. When employees are turning to these payday lenders or predatory lenders. However, it's in the interest of the businesses to take care of the financial health of these employees. And for the most part, every one of our blue chip large companies that we're serving in Malaysia, they are interested in taking care of their employees. And this is not just on the financial aspect, but also on the mental health. Which is all kind of, I think it goes back to the issue of, if you take care of your employees, it will be good for the bottom line of the companies. It reduces their turnover. It motivates employees to be more productive. So I believe that actually, it's employers' employees' interests as well as the well-being of the employees are aligned. And for the most part, all of the employers that we actually work with agree.
And I think you touched upon this real briefly earlier, but tell me a little bit about your thoughts on how has the increase in minimum wage affected the sector of the workforce as well?
I think the increase in minimum wage is a good start. But however, I think, in the sense, for the employers, because we do work mainly with employers in order to deploy the solution, I think they have a higher responsibility of taking care of their employees and actually coming up with a longer term, roadmap for taking care of the employees' finances as well. So, this sort of access to, short term sort of liquidity is a good start. But I think, for us, the employers are working with companies like ourselves is essentially because we actually provide employees direct access to financial institutions. Because we are actually partnered with major banks in each of the countries that we operate in, including Malaysia. So I think the idea is that that employers need to not only just provide maybe a little bit more, income, maybe a little bit more liquidity, but the idea is that they should be providing a longer-term solution. In the case of partnerships with us, it's providing access, you know, through our platform, providing access to major legitimate financial institutions, and also coming up with, you know, financial education programs, which is something that they're also very much interested in.
Right. So how can employers help their low-income workforce build a credible credit history that opens doors to wider financial opportunities in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. And this hits on the fact that a lot of the employees actually have no credit, right, rather than bad credit. And so I think a good start is providing access to reputable banks and also providing financial education at the same time. Our goal is actually, you know, by allowing employers to partner with major banks, as well as giving major banks direct access to some of the data on the credit side from these employees based on their behavior. The idea is that, you know, employees should eventually be able to graduate out of our platform and then actually start dealing with major financial institutions and major reputable banks directly, you know, even without us.
Right. So tell us a little bit about how does earned wage access work as a solution to the issues that we've been covering so far?
Earned wage access is essentially a safe way that we see for employees to actually access emergency funds on a rainy day. So how we work with major banks and employers is that we actually will customize our solution for each of the employers. So for instance, we also cap withdrawals in terms of how much access employees can have in terms of their withdrawals, right? So the concept is simple. We allow employees to withdraw their salary as and when they earn it. So if they've worked even one day's worth in one day, we allow them to employees to access a part of their wages instantly. However, we cap it in general at 50%. So employees can only access up to 50% of what they've earned. However, with certain employers and certain segments of the employees, we go even lower. Sometimes we might customize it to 25%, 30%. We give the HR departments of the employers the power to do that. I think all earned wage access EWA players are the same. Everybody does it slightly different. Some players are borrowing funds and then lending it out themselves. In the case of us, we're actually working with major banks. And so the major banks are actually the funding source for the withdrawals. Furthermore, you know, certain platforms, I believe, are charging, you know, higher fees. But in the case of Paywatch, we actually cap our fees at $1, essentially, per withdrawal. The reason that we do that is because we find that this is earned wage. It's not a financing. It's not a credit product. It's not lending. It's not a loan. This is actually wages that already belong to the employees. So what we decided to do in each of the markets that we're in is to benchmark our fees to ATM fees. So in the case of Malaysia, that's $1, and we are the only ones in Asia that is partnered with major banks in each of the markets we serve in order to deploy the solution.
Right. Now, is EWA relevant even for companies with a higher income workforce?
Yes, actually, we're slowly getting into the M40 segment as well. And actually, what we find that is that essentially, this can we find that a lot of the users use this program because we actually cap it at 30% or 25%, 50%, and up to 50%. That some employees actually use this as a budgeting tool. So they will say that, hey, this is only 30% of my wages. I'm only going to use this product for groceries. Or rice, or food, or certain of their sort of their monthly sort of fixed expenses. In the case of the higher income segment, moreover, I think we find that as long as we're able to at least provide about 30% of earnings that's accessible on a daily basis, that it actually does have an impact, even for employees that otherwise qualify for a credit card. And I think we suspect that this is also because we make it very easy for employees to use. We also allow employees to track how much they've earned on our platform. And we actually find that, you know, we make it a very clean product. It's a nominal fee. So it's very clear, like, you know, how much employees will be paying for the service.
Right. And while earned wage access services have been around for a while now, this is still a fairly new field here in Southeast Asia. So what is your take on the regulatory approach that the government should have for EWA services?
Sure, definitely. I think, you know, I think this is something that I believe the guidelines should be followed in order to safeguard the employees. What we suggest is that I don't think it should be an interest-bearing product. I think it should be, you know, withdrawal fees should be standard, akin to an ATM fee. So essentially, it should not be interest-bearing. That's our at least our stance. Further, I think it should be limited in terms of how much withdrawals can be made, right? I mean, you know, what kind of percentage of wages employees can withdraw, some sort of maximum cap to ensure that the cash flow isn't disrupted the following month. I think that would be that's a very good financial safeguard to have. Moreover, I think, you know, ensuring that employees understand what they're getting themselves into, providing financial education on money management. I mean, I think that should be something that should be part of the regulatory guidelines.
Right. Thanks, Alex, for, you know, clarifying so many things. One last question, though. Is purely providing EWA services enough, or do players in this field need to start providing more value-added services as well?
Absolutely. I mean, for us, I mean, for Paywatch, I mean, this is just one of our many products that we're actually deploying. We're actually getting into the insurance space as well. We're a general agent of several, you know, global insurance companies like Zurich as well as Allianz. And the idea is that actually we find that this is a valuable service, not just for the employees, but also the HR departments of the companies. And so what we are doing is actually aligning ourselves together with the HR departments to provide further employee benefits. So we are becoming an employee benefits platform, the first extended product of which is insurance. However, because we're partnered with major banks, the idea is that we're actually getting into savings as well as term deposit products and other kind of financial services that we believe are in the interest of the employees as well as the employer.
Mm, all right. Well, thanks, Alex, for clearing a lot of stuff up about earned wage access for us. That was Alex Kim, president and co-founder of earned wage access service provider Paywatch. So I think there's definitely a lot of steps being made to make this a more regulated service as well. And hopefully it will go towards helping lower income employees bridge that cash flow.
And for those people just like us who didn't know about this sort of service, you know, welcome.
A little bit of edutainment, I suppose, today.
Right.
Yes, right. And that's about it for today's show. But coming up after the 1 p.m. news bulletin, of course, do not go away. It's been a busy time for the Australian Labor government since coming into power in May. Only 3 days into his prime ministership, Anthony Albanese made his first foreign trip to Japan. And since then, the Australian government has made various diplomatic visits to the region. Against the backdrop of China's rising influence and the importance of strengthening bilateral relations with Southeast Asia, The Breakfast Grill spoke to Australia's Minister for Foreign Affairs, Penny Wong, who is currently visiting Malaysia, about her trip to her birth country and her thoughts on these regional developments. That's coming up after the 1 p.m. news bulletin. On behalf of myself, Christine Wong, and Frida Liu, here is Here and Now by Letters to Cleo on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.